Nalogo, der Logo-Podcast.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen bei Nalogo, dem Podcast von Logo Jugendmanagement. Hier berichten wir regelmäßig über Themen, die für junge Menschen relevant sind. Mein Name ist Sam und wir haben uns dazu entschieden, weitere Spezialfolgen zu produzieren, die den Krieg in der Ukraine thematisieren. Zu Gast ist heute wieder Anastasia, unsere freiwillige Mitarbeiterin vom EU-Programm ESK. Hello Anastasia and welcome again to our podcast.
Hi Sam, thank you for inviting me again.
Today is a Thursday, the 17th of March. What changed since we last talked?
So today it's a 22nd day of full-scale invasion by Russia to Ukraine. And since that time, even more cities and villages, towns in Ukraine were ruined, and many civilians, even more civilians, dead, and even more people left Ukraine. So this is for sure genocide, and it's continue, and it's just very hard to comment.
Yeah, we hear a lot about the war in our media as well. So the attacked cities, the most mentioned attacked city maybe in Austrian or German language media is Mariupol. Do you know something about that?
Yeah, Mariupol is just, I think it's now many Ukrainians with whom I'm in contact and just people whom I follow on social media, they commented something like, okay, it's already a wound for us, and like part of me also dead together with those people who dead in Mariupol. And it's, I think it's approximately 2,000 civilians who were killed during this time. And it's the same like across the rest of Ukraine at the same time. So only in Mariupol, over 2,000 people. And yeah, the thing was like, one of the scariest things for me is that they started to have this mass grave, because it's impossible to bury people in a usual way on the cemeteries because of the unstoppable airstrikes and all these attacks. And people didn't have access to water, to food. And it was just, I don't know, it was just very hard to even think, just unthinkable. But last days, they start this, like, evacuation process started. And I think over 20,000 people already left. Already left Mariupol, and now they're going to another region, to another biggest city, Zaporizhia, which is, I think, 200 kilometers, maybe a bit more from Mariupol. But this road takes a lot of time because of checkpoints, because of Russian checkpoints, because of checkpoints by this so-called independent, this republics in Donetsk and Luhansk, and they're checking them. They are even like checking the messengers, and some checkpoints, there are very crazy episodes when they also took the phones and burned them. And yeah, so people have quite difficult times also living. But people in this in the villages along this road to Zaporizhia, they help them very much. They updated them that you can stay for a night here. Or also, for example, a village in Zaporizhia region where my parents live, it's 4 kilometers from this main road you take from Mariupol to Zaporizhia. And they decided, okay, we can also host some people. They coordinated inside their community. And yesterday my parents, they just came with a car and a big post, a big sign was like, you can stay for a night with us on a road. And they were like stopping people, welcoming them, talk to them, and send them to people in this village so they can get some food, some attention, stay at home and rest a bit and continue the journey. So now it's finally people not blocked in this city in Mariupol, and they can leave it. And also, which was very good news today, that Yesterday, Russian, they put a huge bomb on a drama theater, and it's just in the heart of this, in the city center, and it was very symbolic place. And another thing, that over 20,000 people were hiding in a shelter under this theater. And yesterday it was just like black day. So yesterday it was just a really horrible day, because everyone started to think, okay, these people could be dead, all these 20,000 people, because like the theater was, the building was completely ruined. But today the rescuers, they started to like remove this ruined parts, and the shelter was untouched. So like all the people there alive, and this is just, yeah, a big relief. Really happy to know it now.
A lot of incredible information you just told us about. I have some questions that might be interesting for our listeners. First of all, why do you think is Mariupol so interesting, military speaking, for the Russians? Why is it such a war hotspot?
Yes, it's a good question, because Mariupol, it was not easy to occupy Mariupol also at the 8 years ago when everything started. So the Russians occupied it, but also then it quite soon was returned to Ukraine. And this city was, after Lugansk and Donetsk, like the main city were occupied, Mariupol became this hub for all, and the central point for this Donbas region, which was under Ukrainian control. And a lot of support, a lot of came there, like funding from the European countries as well. A lot of researchers, artists from all over the world came there, many initiatives. It was very, very lively city, and it was also rebuilt very well. I've been there in April 2018, and it was just like very clean, very modern city, with a lot of cafes, with a lot of, I don't know, art spaces, with a good public transportation, with renewed, renovated hospitals. And for me, it was just, I don't know, it was very hard to see, like, they just decided to come and to ruin this city, which starts like to have this prosperity period. And yeah, it's also, I think, a part of this genocide approach, when they just wanted to remove Ukraine from the map. And also, yeah, according to the hospital, it was another horrible event last week, when they attacked, Russians attacked maternity hospital. Yeah, so it's just to understand what is the level of, and no limits actually for the cruelty.
And the evacuation roads that go through Ukraine, you told us that one is going near your parents' house. What are people doing there to support each other? What are the options and the possibilities even to take someone in? Are there areas where there is more food and water accessible for everyone, or how does that work?
So how my parents, for example, decided to start everything, because 2 days ago, when the evacuation process and these corridors were open for people on their cars to leave the city, and so they got a call from one village which is the nearest to this, like it. They, I think that they drove already over 100 kilometers, and it was already late evening, and they really needed a place to stay. And they just came to a village, which is a part of a district where my parents live. So district, it's like one town and, I don't know, 10 villages. And so they came to one village of this district, and 200 people late in the night, and they ask for some, I don't know, a school gym to stay, any places. And then my parents, because they kind of, I don't know how to say, activists in this district, in this community, always, they did volunteer also during this last eight years. So they got a call, can you please help with finding for mattresses? And they, I remember that I messaged them in the evening. It was 10 in the evening, and they said, we are busy, we are trying to find the sleeping bags, mattresses. And then they decided, okay, but why these people should stay just in gym on a floor? We can organize like real families, real houses to host them. And next day they just created a list. And yeah, so it's, I think for Ukrainians, during this last, again, 8 years, it became just a normal thing to coordinate through chats, like to call each other. So my mom, for example, because she is a headmaster at school, so she has access to a lot of people, and she created a list of people from their village who can host people, how many people, and they just, yeah, stop people and gave them the contact on, I mean, the people from Mariupol on the road gave them the contact. Okay, you can go here, and also at school canteen and kindergarten canteen, the community from the most another active villagers, they just came and cooked together for them. So
I don't even know what to say, because like when we hear about war, like an instinct would be to leave, to go away. A lot of people are refugees right now and leaving from the country because they want to escape that horrible scenario. So one of the reasons to stay is to help. What could other reasons be to stay in Ukraine right now? What do you think?
Yeah, so I think it's approximately 3 million people already left Ukraine. And yeah, and it's almost 40 million are still in Ukraine. And I think it's why people stay, because they just don't have any opportunity to leave the country, or they also move to some more relatively safer places, like to the villages or to Western Ukraine. Now Western Ukraine is really full. And yeah, and many people, they just cannot imagine themselves not being in Ukraine. So they started volunteering, they actually help people to evacuate, they bring this humanitarian aid, food, water, medications to the most dangerous places. Yeah, for example, I saw an update from my friend, and she posted about her Mariupol friend, who before all these corridors, like more than a week ago, he just decided, okay, I'm gonna do everything to start to bring some food and water to people in Mariupol, to bring it from other cities. So it's a very risky, but many people, they just determined to do this. And also many people, they left the civilians roles and joined the army. Also, for example, one girl who used to be a communications manager, my former colleague, she is also of my age, 27, and now she's actually at front line with a gun. And I think it's 20,000 women who are fighting in Ukrainian army now, also in this defensive unit, local defensive unit. And yeah, so
it's a lot of routines changed. I mean, I think most of the routines, of the daily routines of Ukrainian people changed during that 22 days of war. And for you also some things changed. What changed for you personally?
So yeah, my life is completely different, and it's like unstoppable anxiety, to be honest, during the day. Now I have less this screen time and doom scrolling. I try to follow some schedule and check the news in some particular times. But at the same time, it's very, very hard not to follow this anxiety with just scrolling and follow every notifications, because I had now a lot of notifications. And yeah, I cannot do many typical things from formal life, like, I don't know, going for a walk or doing yoga. Because it's, I mean, I sometimes push myself to do it, just to refocus and get some energy. But it's quite hard not to find yourself in total despair. My day usually starts now earlier because there is this 1 hour difference in time between Austria and Ukraine. So I try to check on my parents at 8 in the morning and also in the evening and during the day. And also I'm trying to check on all my friends who left Ukraine or who are still in Ukraine. Sometimes like it's very hard to check on all of them and I feel very sad that I missing this because there are also some people who are checking on me. And on the one hand, it's so supportive and it's just magic to feel all this support and all this solidarity and all these people. But sometimes you just don't know what to say. You're so frustrated or angry. And yeah, a lot of emotions and a lot of things to cope with.
And one of your friends' name is Alex, and he's where right now?
He's in the same region where my parents live, but his village in a more dangerous and attacked area. It's near Vasilivka, and there were very big and bloody attacks, and he spent several days in a row sitting in a basement without good internet. And the thing is, he is of my age. He's my classmate, groupmate. We studied together at master program, and he lived for the I think last 2 years with his father, and was working remotely, had quite nice routine, and yeah, now his life also changed a lot. But he is holding up very good, and I really admire how he is trying to support himself, his father, and also me and other friends sometimes when we are just, we don't know what to do, we don't know what to say, how to help. It's just so painful, and he is like, yeah, let's hope for the better.
Yeah, we sent Alex some questions and he's going to answer them for us right now.
Hi, my name is Alexander, or Alex. I'm 28 years old and I'm living in the southern part of Zaporizhia region, partially occupied Donetsk region and Azov Sea are nearby. I'm a content marketer and I'm living with my father in suburban area. It's village of Mihalivka, and it's just 16 kilometers from temporarily occupied town of Melitopol. My territory is also occupied right now. To be honest, my only task is to survive in my daily routine. Russian terrorists are located in the central part of my village. I believe that they are using it as a hub to recharge their forces. They are looting local markets for cigarettes and local farmers for fuels. At the moment, my village has gas and water supply, electricity supply. I'd like to point out that it's rather an exception than a trend in the occupied territories in the south of Ukraine. My father and I are trying to limit our activities and spend less time outdoors. Kids are not going to schools. For example, one of the local hairdressers is opening for the first time since 21st February for a couple of hours today. It's not possible to pay without cash, and not all the markets have everything that people need. Some of the products, some of the goods are only provided in limited amount for every family. Also, some people are trying to leave my village using unofficial corridors. Some of them manage and everything is okay. They are reaching Zaporizhia, central part, central town of my region. But some people are being actually wounded and killed because Russians are not staying aside when actually peaceful civilians are going to the Zaporizhia. So it's really it's high risk to leave my village. It's actually a lottery. It's just like I don't know, good luck, or I don't know how to call it. At the moment, I have only mobile internet. Another two mobile providers are not working here, so that's how I can check whether my friends in Mykolaiv, Kharkiv and other regions of Ukraine are still alive. Russian TV is being broadcasted. Russians are also trying to silence our radio waves, but we managed to listen to Ukrainian ones with my father to know the latest news. I don't know, I'd like to, in the end, to call on the listeners of this podcast, to everyone who is listening to what I'm saying right now, to stand with Ukraine. It's high time to choose between democratic values over the material ones. War is closer to you than you might suppose. Putin won't stop if you won't help us, Ukrainians, to stop him. Don't let Munich 1938 to repeat again. Every human life is priceless, no matter what categories of nationality we could be thinking of. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much, Alex, for that detailed insight about the situation that is going on there. Anastasia, I would like to ask you to repeat the names of the region and the city where it happens, where Alex is right now.
So it's Zaporizhia region. It's a region next to Donbas area. And it's Mikhailivka village. It's a village of thousand people, so it's quite a big village. And it's not far away from quite hot places with a lot of attacks near Vasilivka, near Pologe, Orikhiv. So this is a way very interesting for occupants.
So Alex, we send you best wishes and strength to get through this situation. Hearing all that, for me, it's really interesting because we talk a lot and often you seem inspired and motivated and you also smile and laugh a lot. How can you manage to keep your positive attitude or your humor?
It's very helpful to have around me so many people who share my views, who also question the situation, who are on Ukrainian side for sure, who ask me, who are ready to support, and I'm so inspired and I'm still functioning due to people only.
Thank you so much for this very interesting podcast.
Thank you for having me.